This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Everybody knows that America is about to get a lot grayer. The generation that celebrated youth in the 60s is now careening towards 60. And that raises questions about just how eager boomers will be for the changes that inevitably accompany that AARP card. Some things, though, will not change. This generation represents the biggest demographic bulge in American history, a fact that affects everything from marketing to politics of Social Security. It will remain obsessed with youth. Just check out the numbers for cosmetic surgery. And it will look for new answers to age-old problems. At the MIT Age Lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts, researchers are working on ways to make life easier for the elderly and for the people who take care of them. So here's an email challenge for you. What new breakthroughs do you think would transform daily life for the next generation of the elderly? We're not talking medical breakthroughs, cures for cancer here, but technology. Yes, geezer gizmos. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Or if you'd like to discuss whether we should accept our aging with whatever grace we can muster or fight it by any means available, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Joining us now from his home in Massachusetts is Joe Coughlin. He's founding director of the MIT Age Lab, a partnership between MIT, industry, and the aging community to engineer innovative approaches and technologies to improve the quality of life for older adults and for those that care for them. Thanks very much for joining us today.
And you forgot to add that I'm a boomer as well. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Well, how are you boomers, and I have to admit, I think we better phrase it, we boomers, how are we changing the way society ages?
Well, as you said at the top of the show, I mean, they are the largest demographic group in history, not just in the United States, but Canada, Europe, the Dankai generation in Japan. This is a wave, if you will, that is not just washing across North America, but indeed most of the industrialized world. And as a group, they have always considered themselves, in many cases, the me generation. Well, in fact, it is all about me. And this is a generation that is not going to go weakly into that good night and will want to not just live longer, but will want to live better.
And all of us, statistically speaking, are living longer.
Absolutely. I mean, think about the following. In the year 1900, life expectancy was around 47. By the year 2000, we are looking well into the 70s to the point where, frankly, the fastest growing part of the population was 85-plus. That now means that you've got as many adult years ahead of you at age 50 as you did at age 20.
Well, tell us a little bit about some of the technologies you're working on there at the MIT Age Lab. I know you have one called Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we don't think about as we age, and we tend to think about living longer, we tend to focus on the technologies that are at, if you will, the molecular level, the better medicine, the better food. Well, those are all important, and in fact, those are major contributors as to why we're here. But the Age Lab and our work is really asking the question, now that you're here, and you're going to be here for another three decades, what are you going to do? How are you going to get around? Where are you going to live? How will you continue to work? Well, Miss Daisy, or Driving Miss Daisy Digitally, is our driving simulator and related work that looks at how do we use new technologies in the car to help people drive longer safely as they age. Because frankly, particularly in the United States, if you don't drive, you don't get out. If you don't get out, that's not longer life. That's a prison sentence.
Some people might argue that what you ought to be working on is a better way for mass transit. Then everybody could get around.
Yeah, well, that actually is a great idea. The difficulty is that the boomers, like their parents, chose to live where transit is not. 70% of us age 50 and older are aging where transit either serves poorly or does not exist at all.
Shopping can be a big deal for elderly people and anybody. Again, I know you have some ideas under the heading retail health.
Yeah, one of the things that we have been looking at, and as many of our colleagues around the world, is how to deliver health better. Health is no longer the emergency room. It's no longer the clinical setting that we think about. And unfortunately, Dr. Welby is dead. Now we're trying to access health any way we can. And increasingly, we're seeing how information technology and sensors and providing information from doctors wherever they may be in the world are going to provide you real-time advice in the drugstore, in the grocery store. In other words, at the point of decision where you need to make choices about the drugs you take, the foods you eat, how you prepare meals and the like. So all of a sudden, we're going to start to see the store, if you will, as a partner in living longer and living better.
How's that going to work?
Well, think about the following. Right now, we have in many stores kiosks to take our blood pressure or something like that. And usually, in fairness, those things are there to keep you busy while you're waiting for your script to be filled. We're working with a number of companies to look at how can you use that kiosk to connect you with healthcare providers so you can pick up the phone in real time and talk to a telehealth, telemedicine provider at a major hospital, to be able to take your personalized diet given to you in the store and using a smart shopping cart that is going to be using anything from barcode to penny chips on products to be able to help you choose whether this tomato sauce has too much salt or this one just the right amount.
We have an email challenge going. We're asking our listeners who have access to computers to send us their suggestions for geezer gizmos that will ease the transition into senescence. Here's one, cars that drive themselves will be helpful for the elderly. That's a little bit like driving Miss Daisy, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Essentially, what we're seeing now with cars today and in the future are cars that are increasingly, shall we say, getting intelligent. But, you know, part of the challenge that we've had in the lab in particular is that as the car gets smarter, the drivers remain the same of any age, and we're not quite sure whether we're 20 or 70, how to use these new technologies once they're put in there by the car companies.
A lot of older people, and yes, this boomer generation is the most technically advanced ever to get to this age, but still a lot of older people have difficulty, shall we say, use an awful word, interfacing with new technology.
Absolutely, and in fact, it's not just older people, it's all of us. By the time you've been exposed to technology for 4, 5, 6 years, even if you're in your 20s or even early 30s, you get used to a certain way of looking at technology. So when the technology design or the capabilities change, all of a sudden you become an older adult. Well, for those of us who are 40, 50, 60, 70 plus, we have 4 or 5 decades of how we think things are supposed to work. So when we see something new, we try to force fit that into our experience. And often that becomes a big challenge in the car, in the home, anywhere.
Here's another email suggestion. The biggest breakthrough will be a treadmill that doubles as a nice piece of furniture.
Well, actually, we have invented in my house a treadmill that dries sweaters very well.
Yeah, I have a dust collector in my house. That works spectacularly. Our phone number again, 800-989-8255. If you have an email suggestion, TOTN@npr.org. And let's begin. Sarah is on the line with us from Chico, California.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What the emphasis that I wanted to put on this conversation is the fact that the younger generation seems to have a tendency to project their technological values onto the elderly. And I'm a gerontologist, and I work with the elderly all the time. And they don't particularly care for a lot of gizmos and high-tech apparatus that the younger people seem to want them to use, and there seems to be a lot of the care that goes into the elderly is becoming more impersonal, so that the children don't have to take as much care of them or to check up on them. They don't even have to dole out their medications to them because they have these giant machines that will do it for them.
Impersonality, Joseph Coughlin, an increasing issue for everybody of every age.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just the older adults, it's our children and those of us in between. But here's the greatest challenge, and I noticed that the caller said that she's a gerontologist. Here's the greatest challenge that she and others can readily appreciate. One, increasingly, adult children are living further and further away from their parents. They no longer choose to go to school, age, and work in the place that they were brought up in. But secondly, the greatest labor demand out there are for geriatricians, gerontologists, social workers, and people who provide that human touch. And increasingly, as caregivers, we're looking at technology not to be impersonal, but in fact, and sadly, it may be the only touch we have.
Mm-hmm. Well, today, a lot of people don't understand what a gerontologist is. I'm not a medical gerontologist. I'm simply a gerontologist that deals with the physical and emotional effects of aging.
And I think one of the things that you point out really well is that we don't know what a gerontologist is because in large part, aging was always something that was more negative to look at. And if the boomers can make a greater contribution than anything else that they've done in the past 30, 40, 50 years of their lives, One of the things will be to reinvent aging as truly a third age to be celebrated with all the supports from business, from government, from the professions. Today, if you're a small baby or if you're an older adult, you are basically ignored both by business, by the government, as well as by researchers. And I think that you bring up a good point that we need to think about how can we use technology to increase the warmth and the touch and the reach of caregivers who may be family members as well as doctors themselves.
And the only technical way to do that is the human touch.
Well, in part you're right, but the other part is to make sure that human touch is done well.
Make sure
that it's done often. But we also should think about that technology is not always the widget. There are some that are very simple. There are household tools that are used today that are very stylish and are the yuppie tools of choice that were designed, if you will, for arthritic hands.
Mm-hmm.
The microwave oven, most of us look at as a convenience, but I would argue to you that the microwave is probably one of the best pieces of assistive technology out there because it enables typically an older woman who no longer enjoys the presentation of making a meal for herself because her spouse may have parted, her children live far away. All of a sudden, that microwave meal is her way of popping in a convenience meal, giving her something to eat, period, rather than just picking up a sandwich that she may did not finish at lunch.
Sarah, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let's go now with Barbara, and Barbara's with us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Hi.
Hi.
Interesting topic. My husband and I are baby boomers. We're a triple-decker sandwich generation. I've got kids still in college. I've got a 74-year-old mother-in-law that's living with us now, and her 94-year-old mother also living with us. And what my mother-in-law talked to me about today is a granny nanny to give her some relief. And it's like, what are we going to do to, as we get older, we're faced with parents and grandparents living longer, which straps our resources. I think the whole tax structure needs to really be looked at to help. We're not going to be able to provide for our retirement if we're faced with also having to care for these longer live generations.
Barbara's family structure, statistics suggest, is not going to be all that uncommon anymore.
No, and in fact, it's probably only going to, quote-unquote, get worse. That is because if you think about it, many boomers have married and remarried. Many have had children, but an increasing number have not. So they may not have that child caregiver or adult child to look forward to as they age. And increasingly, as they marry and remarry, all of a sudden the loyalty lines as to who do you provide care to and who do you look in on becomes increasingly strained. And so one of the things that we're going to have to invent is twofold. The boomers are going to have to start thinking about how to make stronger social networks that are not necessarily based upon bloodline. And secondly, the caller brings up a great point in terms of tax code, is how is the federal and state government going to begin to look at how we can start thinking about the tax code to incent people to invest in caregiving services, caregiving technologies that improve the quality as well as the availability to care for mom, dad, grandpa, as well as your child.
Barbara, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And good luck to you.
Thank you.
Sounds like you may need it.
Well, they're wonderful people, but it's still a stretch.
Or you may want to have your kids study gerontology.
Well, you know, I may point him in that. He's into digital media.
Okay, well, could be the same thing. Here's another suggestion for a geezer gizmo. This is from Sally in San Antonio. A rechargeable hearing aid, no battery changing, just plug in a teeny-weeny cord and recharge overnight. Face it, we'll need them, and the current battery changing routine is difficult for a 50-year-old. Trust me, I change batteries for my mom who can't see the battery or the door of her hearing aid. She's 88, and it's not easy. You know, it requires reading glasses, magnet tweezers, more geezer accessories. So there's a suggestion. If you have one for something that might make a technological breakthrough that might make life a little easier for all of us as we learn to pronounce our words properly, give us an email, TOTN@npr.org. Our phone number is also available. That's 800-989-8255. More after a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about new technologies that could make it easier for people who are aging and for their caretakers as well. Our guest is Joseph Coughlin, founding director of the MIT Age Lab and director of the New England University Transportation Center at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. We have an email challenge going for your suggestions for technological breakthroughs that might make life easier. Here's one from Bill Westerman in Brookville, Indiana. I'd like somebody to invent glasses that can be worn when driving at night that will reduce the inevitable glare problem that increases as we age. If you have a suggestion, TOTN at NPR.org. Any question about how we stave off the effects of aging begs the question, should we? The process of getting older brings benefits that can get lost in the shuffle of chasing youth. Joining us now from his home in New Haven, Connecticut, is Dr. Sherwin Newland, a clinical professor of surgery at Yale's School of Medicine, the author of Lost in America and How We Die. Dr. Newland, always good to have you on the program.
It's nice to be with you.
What's your view of the aging process? Are we devoting too much energy to chasing youth?
The way I see it, aging is not really a disease, is it? It's the condition upon which we've been given life. This is the inevitable fate of all animals, and my thought is that attempts to increase our lifespan, which is about 120 years, I guess, are simply exercises in vanity.
Speaking of vanity, there's an awful lot of, cosmetic engineering going on.
Well, there certainly is. I don't have nearly as much a problem with cosmetic engineering as I do with genetic engineering. The genetic engineers are promising us all sorts of wonderful advantages to the extent that they're telling us they may help us to live to 150 or 200 years, and that's precisely what I mean when I talk about the vanity of it all.
Hmm. What are the good points about getting old, do you think?
Well, the good points are about getting old are that this wisdom that we've been hearing so much about is actually a fact. It's a matter of being able to not just having assimilated one's experiences, but to make some sense out of them, and also to have the leisure time to think about them a little bit. One of the great pleasures of aging for me is what our gerontology friends, the people who do the research in aging, call compression of morbidity, the realization that all of the aches and pains and weaknesses of old age are not, in fact, inevitable.
Yet the quality of life and keeping ourselves healthy gets more and more important as we get older.
Well, I just wish people would start earlier. I think people in middle age have to realize that they, too, have a responsibility to their bodies. You know, we've long since discovered that the most common reason that older people can't live alone anymore is not any named disease, but just simply weakness, just fragility, muscular weakness. And, of course, muscles do respond to exercise regardless of how old we are. We can improve the strength of our muscles. In doing so, we improve the solidity and strength of our bones. And from that point of view, many of the physical debilitations that we worry so much will not be present for many of us.
And also to, as you talk about socialization, that is vital as well to keep that intellectual life going.
Well, that's right. We have known, again, for some long time that the strength of the synapses, the connections between nerve cells, whether in the brain or elsewhere, is dependent on how often they're used. And so the thinking part of our brain really does have to be used. We've got to keep reading. We've got to keep challenging ourselves with intellectual problems, with thoughts, whether it's about politics or literature or whatever it may be. And this is not just smoke and mirrors. This is the real thing. There have now been enough studies of people who have undertaken programs in intellectual and physical exercise that we know that debilitation can be held off an average, in one of the studies from the University of Pennsylvania, was 7 3/4 years by exercising, avoiding cigarettes, maintaining a normal body mass.
And, of course, catching your train on time, which is your immediate urgent business.
Right. Yes.
Dr. Newland, we thank you for taking your time out to talk to us today and pressing your schedule to get to the New Haven Railroad there.
You're very kind. Thanks, Neil.
Dr. Sherwin Newland joined us from his home in New Haven. He's clinical professor of surgery at Yale School of Medicine and the author of Lost in America and How We Die. And Joseph Coughlin, as you were listening to Dr. Newland there, it was interesting. He was talking about the natural lifespan of the animals that we all are being maybe 120, and that perhaps pushing beyond that in terms of genetic engineering is all vanity, yet we've got a long way to go before we get to 120, don't we?
Yeah, in fact, we've done a very good job of extending a virtual fountain of youth over the past 100 or so years, but we have yet to resolve a paradox, which is the greatest achievement of humankind for the past 100 years may, in fact, be extending our lives by 3 decades. But we have yet to invent, if you will, the infrastructure of everything from transportation to housing to the daily experiences of life of how we're going to do that, making buildings more accessible, making our ability to, as Dr. Newman was talking about, the wisdom factor. How do we encumber and require older adults to transmit that wisdom across generations? What are the technologies that we're going to use to do that?
And we have an email challenge. If you have a suggestion for an invention that might make life a little easier for us, no matter how old we are, Judy Johnson in Vancouver, Washington suggests varying height chairs and sofas so you can pick your preferred height before you sit down. And, of course, she says that would make it easier to get out of. Get another caller on the line, and this is Grant. Grant is on the phone with us from Oxford, Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, Grant.
The very technology I'm using right now. I'm an Episcopal priest, and I visit people who are homebound. They're in nursing homes, and the one technology they're already comfortable using is cordless phones, cell phones, but what we have available right now is challenging for people who might have had strokes, only use one hand, keeping phones charged, all the things that we struggle with who are able-bodied, just keeping up with, are greater challenges for them, people who are older. But, boy, they appreciate the ability to pick up the phone and connect with people.
Grant, I'm not